The Pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. DJ, will you please call roll?
Chair Tomko?
Here.
Vice Chair Gossett-Steven? Dem Ranking Member Williams?
Here.
Alvarez?
Here.
Gracie Davis?
Here.
Kennedy?
Here.
Daly?
Here.
Daniels? Dunkley?
Here.
Garcia?
Present.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Present.
Lopez?
Here.
Michael? Rizzo?
Here.
Temple?
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee, and I also want the record to reflect that I fought very hard for this to start at 9, and here we are at 8. So please make sure that all cell phones and other communications are turned off or on silent mode. Good early morning, members. We have a very busy schedule today, and this morning we will hear the following three bills. PCS for HB 929, HB 1361, and CS for HB 1403. To accommodate members presenting in other committees, we're going to play a little air traffic control, and we will start today with PCS for HB 929. Unfortunately, due to a death in her family, which we will be keeping her in our prayers, Rep. Trabulsi is unable to present today, so Rep. Kennedy has graciously agreed to present the PCS for HB 929 for her. And Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to explain the PCS.
Thank you, Chair. Ranking Member Williams, Chair Tomko, the cost of child care is a significant concern for many families across the United States, including Florida. High child care expenses can create financial challenges for parents and impact their ability to work, which in turn can have broader implications for the economy. This bill addresses the issue of child care affordability by recalibrating the school readiness eligibility entrance threshold to keep up with the state of Florida's median income. This would capture the single-parent households making $15 an hour in anticipation of the minimum wage requirement. It codifies a sliding fee scale from 3 to 7% for parent co-payments to align to federal regulations for the school readiness program. The bill also makes changes to the state school readiness program to maximize participation, codify funding, and support adequate reimbursement rates for school readiness providers. And you heard, unfortunately, Chair Trabulsi is not here because of a family situation. And so we have both staff and Molly Grant from the Children's Forum who are happy to answer any specific technical questions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kennedy. Seeing there's one amendment to the PCS, I would like to turn the gavel over to our Vice Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The amendment is barcode PCS for HB 929A1, and Chair Tomko, you are recognized to present the amendment.
Thank you. This amendment codifies in statute the methodology used for allocating the school readiness program funds to the early learning coalitions.
Are there any questions to the amendment? Is there anyone wishing to testify on the amendment? Thank you. Is there Matt Herndon? Sorry, this is just for the bill. Never mind. I take that back. Is there debate on the amendment? Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing no objection, so the amendment has passed. With that, I turn the gavel back over to the chair.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill as amended? Ranking Member Williams.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. When you spoke about qualifying the waiting list, what does that look like? How would we actually do that?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I will. That's a technical question, which I would love to turn over to either staff or the technical experts on the bill.
Great. We have Chair Denise Popfin that can answer that question. Sorry.
So for purposes of amending the eligibility, which the bill does, it moves it from 150% of the federal poverty level to 55% of the state median income, which equates to about 163% of the federal poverty level. So for purposes of increasing it, if there is a current wait list at the 150% of the federal poverty level, we wanted to contemplate being able to address the wait list so at the current level, we weren't leaving anyone out.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So will we eliminate those on the waiting list prior to us actually changing the percentage of the salaries that we're speaking of?
That is what is contemplated, yes, ma'am.
I just really would like to have a conversation about it.
Wonderful. Yes, we can certainly have one later. Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing no further questions, we have some members in the audience wishing to testify. We have Matt Herndon, United Way of Suncoast, waving in support. Matt Herndon, Tampa Bay Partnership, waves in support. We have Edward Briggs with Helios Education Foundation, waving in support. Matt Herndon, again, for United Way, I think this might be a duplicate. And we have Sarah Massey with the Florida Chamber of Commerce, waving in support. We have Michelle Watson, Florida Alliance of Children's Councils and Trusts. She wishes to appear and is a proponent.
Good morning. I just want to thank you so much for this bill. Florida is at the precipice of being a leader in early learning with all of the changes that have happened over the last many years, and really looking at providing reimbursement rates against the cost of care, what it actually costs to serve a child in a high-quality early learning experience is really going to support higher kindergarten readiness rates. So I really appreciate the thought that was put into this bill, and I support this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Molly Grant, the Association of Early Learning Coalitions. For information only, but you are recognized to appear.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to first thank the bill sponsor, the chair, and the committee staff for all of their work for bringing these issues forth before the committee. The Association of Early Learning Coalitions is made up of all 30 early learning coalitions throughout the state. And the AELC specifically for this session is supporting changes to eligibility to ensure that we're preserving access for our lowest income working families. And also supporting efforts to increase provider reimbursement rates to ensure not only are providers being reimbursed for the services we're asking them to do, but to ensure that the value of the voucher that the family receives provides meaningful access and parental choice for those families. So the bill and its PCB and as amended provides a solid starting point for those issues, and we look forward to working with the bill sponsor to continue those conversations to ensure that we're strengthening the bill as much as possible.
Thank you so much. Next, we'll have Melissa Nelson, United Way of Florida. She is a proponent, waving in support. We have Michael Barrett, the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, who is waving in support. And that will be it for appearance cards. Members, is there any debate on the bill? Representative Rizzo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say that this is something that anyone that knows about early learning understands that really it's at a critical moment. And this, I hate to say that it's a game changer, because that word, that term is kind of thrown out there a lot, and it's usually hyperbole, but this really is. This impacts families in every single one of our districts and every single provider, I think, around the state. So it's just fantastic to see this, and thank you for stepping in for Chair Trabalsi that had to be home this week.
Any further debate? Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. As a prior early learning center, this is very important to me. But I would really like to make sure that the solid foundation is laid. It's a critical time for childcare, early learning coalitions and early learning centers to actually be in this position. But as a state representative, as someone that's making the rules and regulation, I would just really like to make sure that we have that conversation to make sure that we are doing things that actually help so that we won't have to come back next year and do any changes. So thank you very much for stepping up and bringing this bill forward.
Any further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Kennedy, you are recognized to close.
Wave closed, Madam Chair.
Representative Kennedy, having wave closed on the bill, DJ, will you please call the roll?
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gossett-Seaton?
Yes.
Ranking Member Williams?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez? Gracie Davis?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Daly? Daniels?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Members, by your vote, show the PCS for HB 929 as amended will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative. Next, we will take up HB 1361, Education, by Representative Temple. Representative Temple making his way to the podium. You are recognized whenever you make it there.
Good morning, Chair, Ranking Member, and Committee. HB 1361 extends and reinforces the legislator's commitment to supporting Florida students. Last year, we expanded the eligibility for New World Scholarship accounts to students who have a deficiency in mathematics, as well expanded the New World's Reading Initiative to include students in pre-kindergarten. Building on those policies, this will expand the eligibility for New World Scholarship program to students enrolled in voluntary pre-K who exhibit a substantial deficiency in early literacy or math skills. It also expands the credentials for eligible part-time tutors. It renames the New World's Reading Initiative to New World's Learning Initiative since we added math to that name or to the services. It also renames the micro-credential program to New World's micro-credential program. It designates the University of Florida Lassiter Center for Learning as the initiative's administrator. And it also creates a New World's tutoring program within the New World's Learning Initiative to support school districts and schools in bolstering student achievement in reading and mathematics, and requires the program administrator to establish agreements with every school district to provide the additional literacy or mathematics support. And that is the bill.
Representative Temple, having explained the bill and seeing there are no amendments, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, we do have some members of the audience wishing to testify. We have Alexis LaRoe with Step Up for Students waving in support. We have Nathan Hoffman with the Foundation for Florida's Future waving in support. Sarah Massey with Florida Chamber of Commerce waving in support. Michael Barrett with the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops waving in support. Sue Waltansky, I hope I got that right, wishing to appear. And you are recognized.
Thank you. I'm Sue Waltansky. I'm a Monroe County School Board member, but I'm speaking here today for myself and for information. First of all, I'm a retired pediatrician, and it's really concerning to me that very young children are going to be labeled as deficient based on a single progress monitoring test score. VPK students can be early fours or they can be almost fives, and there is a vast difference in their abilities in the classroom. Young fours don't need tutoring and intervention, they just need to grow up to be five. And this money, I believe, would be better spent, especially for struggling communities, in expanding to full-day VPK, which is has better access for working class and low-income families. The three-hour day is very difficult for a working mom to get their children to, so they end up putting them in a less quality education center. Now, the other thing I wanted to say is I've read a lot of confusing bills, and I'm usually pretty good at sorting them out. This bill is really confusing because of the amount of New World programs. There is a New World Scholarship account, which is an ESA, which the administrator is an SFO, which will likely be Step Up for Students. And they can spend that money on tutoring or on books and curriculum, and this is going to allow direct purchases to an already overburdened platform at Step Up for Students. So that's part one. The other part is the New World Learning Initiative provides books to families for free. It now also gives grants to schools for tutoring, which can be in school or after school, and I think for schools to be able to navigate which program the family is asking for, where to, and for school boards to where to send people to. You want tutoring? Do you want the in-school tutoring with New Worlds Initiative, or do you want the ESA tutoring with? It's got to be fixed so that those two have somewhat separate names, so people can send them to the right administrator, and they can get the services that they need. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Seeing no further testimony, is there any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Temple, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Absolutely. And I look forward to having conversation just to address a couple things. One of the reasons for the broadness is to make sure that it meets the need of every community. If we tighten it too tight, then it won't meet the needs necessarily. And it will be one of the charges with the last senator is to work with every school district to find the right method to make sure that the needs are met in the right way. And the reason for the direct purchase, because there have been issues with getting things reimbursed in timely fashion. So with the direct purchase, that will shorten that time frame and lessen the burden on the families. But again, look forward to having additional conversation down the road. And with that, I close.
Representative Temple having closed on his bill, DJ, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gossett-Seedon?
Yes.
Ranking Member Williams?
Yes.
Representative Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Representative Kennedy? Representative Daniels?
Yes.
Representative Dunkley?
Yes.
Representative Garcia?
Yes.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Representative Lopez?
Yes.
Representative Michael?
Yes.
Representative Rizzo?
Yes.
Representative Temple?
Yes.
And Representative Alvarez?
Members, by your vote, show HB 1361 will be reported favorably. And at this time, I will now turn the gavel over to our vice chair, and I will present the next bill.
Chair Tomko, you're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair. Members, last year we passed one of the largest expansions of school choice in the nation, which has enabled more parents to choose the education that meets the needs of their students. While hundreds of thousands of families have benefited from these scholarship programs, there have been issues with providing funds in the timeframe we would expect. To address these issues, HB 1403 establishes separate application and renewal deadlines for any scholarship or for the scholarship programs so that renewals can be funded earlier. Any application received after the deadline will be considered for funding the next school year. Payment for full-time tuition and fees must be made by the scholarship funding organization within 7 business days of approval by the parent and school. To address concerns about educational options available to students, the bill allows the Personalized Education Program students, or PEP scholarship students, to use their funds for when instruction is provided away from school under a student learning plan. Members, as you remember during special session, we took steps to address the unprecedented demand for the FESUA scholarship. Because interest in this scholarship continues to grow, HB 1403 increases the annual growth in the number of new FES UA scholarships from 3% to 5% of the ESE population. If demand ever exceeds 95% of capacity again, this bill will allow an increase of an additional 1% the following year. The bill also clarifies eligibility by removing an age limitation from 3- and 4-year-old students with disabilities and allows military families to qualify based on permanent change of station orders. Finally, the bill also increases transparency by requiring SFOs to report on the performance metrics related to applications and reimbursement requests and to solicit feedback from parents, private schools, and providers prior to implementing substantial modifications to the reimbursement process. And that is the bill.
Thank you, Chair Tomko. And there are no amendments. Are there any questions on the bill? Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Chair Tomko. I may just give a couple more comments during debate, but I've gotten quite a few emails on this, especially from my homeschool constituents. So one of the questions that have been asked of me that I'd like to pose to you is, in limiting the subject area for equipment used in as instructional material, does this provide equity for lower income families who struggle to afford equipment for fine arts, physical education, music, career and technical skills, and other electives?
Chair Tomko, you're recognized.
Thank you, and thank you for that question. I'm sure we all have gotten a lot of comments and concerns and emails and calls. I myself have had the same. And, you know, we have a responsibility to balance the needs of our students as well as be fiscal stewards of dollars that we spend in the state of Florida. And so we felt that by, you know, making sure the equipment used for instructional material was put into place was what we saw fit in terms of expanding that child's education and making sure that they're learning all of the areas that they need to. I do want to point out, which I've talked to many of you about this before, while it limits the equipment used to the instructional core classes, they can still go and, you know, take those musical lessons and participate in those art classes. We just limit that equipment to those core courses. However, we still allow for those, you know, lessons to be taken as well.
Their follow-up?
I believe the concern is, yes, they can still take them. You know, they can perhaps take the violin class, but they can't pay for the violin. And for our lower income students, there's a bit of a disparity. I believe that's the question. But I'll address it more in my thoughts and debate. Thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Bracey Davis. Are there any other questions? Ranking Member Williams?
Thank you.
Recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Tomko, could you address the accountability and being transparency part that I spoke to you very briefly on last evening about, if possible, please?
Thank you for that. And Ranking Member Williams, I think we are all waiting for those numbers that we had talked about. So I would really, you know, encourage me and you to reach out to the department to get those numbers. I will say, in terms of how we're addressing the concerns around SFO accountability, and this legislation is we increase transparency to engage with the parents, schools, and providers in their duties. And under the bill, the SFO will have to provide quarterly reports to the department that include information on applications, the processing of reimbursements, requests, as well as parental input and feedback regarding the program. And should an SFO desire to make changes to the reimbursement process prior to implementing any change, the bill requires the SFO to collect that feedback. But we are waiting for those numbers from the department to come in that we had talked about last night. So I am anticipating that they are listening to this and going to get those to us soon.
Follow up, madam.
Yes, follow up. Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rep. Tomko. And I appreciate the conversation that we had on last evening. When you spoke about the SFO, who determines when the funds are actually going to be released and how much will be released? Because I understand that there's several millions of dollars being held in account and not a whole lot being dispersed.
You're recognized.
Thank you so much for that. So we have the payment for full-time tuition and fees must be made by the scholarship funding organization within 7 business days of the approval by the parent and the school.
Anything else?
Follow up.
Yes, ma'am. Follow up. Go ahead.
Okay. Do we have the ability to make sure that's happening?
That is what we are trying to accomplish here, my friend.
Is there anything else? Yes. Rep. Bracey Davis. Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just another bite at the apple. Again, another question from one of our constituents, and it's just for clarity purposes. With the education savings account, it can be used for full-time private schools, but not for full-time private religious schools. Is that correct?
That is not correct.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything else of the members? All right. Is there anyone wishing to testify on the bill? Oh, never mind. I have the cards right here. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. We have Crystal Sitian. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. Yes, ma'am. Wave in support. She's coming. Oh. It's okay. We're flexible. No worries.
Hi, my name is Chris Latian, and I am a seventh grade civics teacher in Miami-Dade County. I would like to say that I applaud the efforts to make more accountability for the voucher programs for the state dollars that are being given away. And I think it's a great step in the right direction, but I would actually like to see a little bit more accountability for the schools that are receiving the taxpayer money in the fact of the standards that I, as a public school teacher, am required to teach. I think the private schools should have the same accountability. As well as, I did a little research on the Florida Medicaid program, and none of those state dollars go to doctors that aren't certified. So I don't think our state dollars should be going to teachers who aren't certified as well. And private schools don't have the same requirement of maintaining certified teachers in their schools. So even though they have educators, they're not necessarily certified through the state of Florida. So their expectations and their accountability there is a little bit less as well. And I would just like to see, as a public school teacher, being held through evaluation, through testing, and other means of scrutiny accountability, I would like to see that same thing being done for the recipients of the vouchers. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Michael Barnett of Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. Wave in support. Edward Briggs, Florida Coalition of Scholarship Schools, wave in support. Ryan Kennedy, Florida Citizens Alliance, wave in opposition. Rick Stevens, Florida Citizen Alliance, wave in support. Elizabeth Suits, sorry, let me see. Oh, you're right. I wish to appear in person. Yes, you're recognized.
Sorry for the confusion. Thank you for recognizing me. And I bring you warm greetings on this brisk morning. I'm happy to be here and appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. I am Rick Stevens. I'm the co-founder of Florida Citizens Alliance. We represent 260,000 supporters across Florida. I'm also the pastor of Diplomat Church in Cape Coral. And if I could borrow a phrase from Chair Tomko's description of an earlier bill, the Hope Scholarship is and has been a game changer for Florida families. This bill includes repealing that scholarship, and we believe that is a huge mistake. As your staff analysis makes clear in its opening sentence describing the Hope Scholarship protects Florida children from harassment, intimidation, or threats in their public school. We think we all share that value for a safe learning environment for Florida students. Not only does it protect the children, it gives the parents the opportunity to provide a safe and effective learning environment for their kids, something that no other provision in Florida law allows, and we don't think we should give this up in the Hope Scholarship. I've talked to people from other states around the nation. No state comes close to protecting children in the fashion the Hope Scholarship does, and nothing that's proposed will replace it. All we're doing is eliminating a very good bill. In fact, as a pastor, I've said to people, the Hope Scholarship is a gift of God to the children and families of Florida. And why we would consider repealing it, I cannot understand. The one argument that keeps coming up is that too few people are using it. Well, let me address that briefly. We have had, in recent reporting, over 100,000 CSER incidents reported to the Department of Education. In every one of those incidents, there has been at least one student eligible for the HOPE scholarship. Some of those incidents obviously would involve more students. And yet we do not see a corresponding reporting of HOPE scholarships being offered to students. Is it any wonder that they aren't utilizing what the school districts don't tell them about it? And the Department of Education has told us that every school district has an affirmative duty to offer that option to parents. In addition, we know of a school in Florida where a teacher was discovered abusing children. Thankfully, that was stopped and the children were rescued. But do you realize that in that school, every student became eligible for the HOPE scholarship, but as far as we know, the school district did not notify the parents? Why would we give up something that is designed to protect our children from harassment, from threats, from intimidation? And why would we take that ability away from parents? The HOPE scholarship was a parents' right initiative before parents' rights became a thing. And why would we consider changing now? We urge you to retain the HOPE scholarship.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am. Go. Yes, ma'am. You're recognized.
You need to have them come back.
Sir, excuse me. We have a question from the committee. Ranking member. You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Sir, do you know why the HOPE scholarship was created?
Am I recognized?
Recognized, yes.
Okay. We understand the HOPE scholarship was recognized to protect children and allow parents to make sure they were in a safe learning environment. When it went through the legislature, it was colloquially known as the bullying bill. And that's often how it's referred to, but it's far more than that.
Madam Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
You're recognized.
If I commit a crime in a group of people, will I be the one arrested or everyone else would be uprooted around me?
You're recognized.
Well, I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a law enforcement person, but generally speaking, the person who is accused of the crime or guilty of the crime pays the penalty, yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. That's the purpose of the HOPE Scholarship. The HOPE Scholarship was created to help parents that felt their children was being bullied. But instead of them uprooting the bully, they uproot the person was doing right, which was all the other children that was in the classroom or at the school. The bully scholarship came out in term now called the HOPE scholarship, number one. Number two, if I am committing a crime, instead of me being removed, they removed all the other students that was around it. That's why the whole scholarship was created. And at this point, it's not being used as they thought they should have. So additional money is being held in an account where we have low and income students that's actually in need of that money, which is not being used. Do you think that's fair?
Okay, thank you, Ranking Member Williams. We're getting into debate. If we could move on to the next speaker, I appreciate it.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, but according to what I know that this meeting is until 10 o'clock, and I have additional questions for the gentleman that came up and talking about the scholarship. I don't have
a
problem with him not answering the question, but I have a problem with questions being asked and they're not able to answer or willing to answer.
Could you meet with the gentleman after the meeting? Would that be acceptable?
I think everyone else would like to hear his response at this point, since the question is is out.
Let's go one more question and round, and then let's call it and move on because we have
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. You're recognized to answer that.
Could I ask for clarification on the question after all of that? I'm sorry.
You're recognized to clarify briefly, please.
The question is if additional money is being set aside and we have students that is in need of that money, is it right to hold that money in an account that's not being used or give it to the children that's in need of the money?
Recognized. Last answer.
As I understand it, the money that's been set aside for the HOPE Scholarship is now being used, and we have not objected to its use in other situations. Our concern is that we retain protection for Florida students. To your point about who gets punished, we know of a situation in a Florida school district where a student was bullied, threatened with physical harm in that student's classroom, the school district's response was to offer that bullied student transfer to another class. They did not remove the student who was the offender. In addition to that, the offense continued and was threatened to the younger sibling of the student in the classroom. So we think this is a valuable protection that keeps parents from being trapped in an untenable situation and students from being trapped in a situation that has not been addressed properly.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Stevens.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next up, Elizabeth Suits wishes to appear and did not mark if she's in opposition or not. But nonetheless, please appear. You're recognized.
Is it on?
Oh, here. Sorry, wave in support. Well, you've got both marked, wave and support.
Wave and opposition.
And both.
Yeah,
okay, opposition. There we go.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Suits. I live in Polk County. On behalf of Polk County Citizens Defending Freedom, I would like to express also my disappointment for the portion that Pastor Stevens mentioned in the bill that repeals the Hope Scholarship for students who have been bullied or harassed and need an immediate option to attend school in a safer environment. We've been told that this scholarship has been rolled into another portion of funding, but nowhere in this bill does it address the immediate access to funds a student could receive to expediently enroll in another school. And as mentioned just prior, you would think that the students who choose to bully others should be the ones who have consequences for their actions and be the ones forced to find another option. However, that does not always happen, as he mentioned. That was actually in my county that happened. There was a situation where the student made a video of herself pretending to shoot another student, and it was not handled. It was not handled well. Instead of removing that student who made this video, the other student was moved to another classroom and then forced to withdraw, and she missed out on her end-of-year celebrations with her classmates because they refused to take care of the situation with the other student. The Hope Scholarship gave the student an immediate access to another option. Obviously, a bullying situation is time sensitive. Students should not have to wait for the next qualifying period to apply for this scholarship. We respectfully ask that you consider this type of situation before moving it forward.
Thank you. I'd like to remind persons in the audience when they speak, we're trying to keep the questions to fiscal questions, and at the next bill stop, the policy questions will be fully debated. So this is a reminder of that. Thank you. And next up, we have Brenda Dickinson, wishing from Home Education Foundation, wishing to appear. You're recognized.
Thank you. I marked first in the first committee opposed. I'm going to mark in support this bill because I believe we're going to be able to work out some of the concerns that we have in this bill as it goes through the process. So I hope to work with you in the future. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. We still have some issues with the language in the instructional materials. We want equity in spending for our parents, whether they can't get the instruments, the additional sportsing equipment, especially if they're low-income families that have taken advantage of this, and if they can't get the items that they need to be able to take the classes or to take lessons, then they are not going to be able to fully participate in the scholarship. So I hope we can come up with some different language on that. And thank you, Representative Bracy Davis, for asking that question, because most of the parents that take the PEP scholarship are one-income families, and they don't have the extra money to be able to buy those additional things. I'd like to look into maybe making it possible for them to rent some of the instruments that they need for participation in music. I don't believe we have that in the bill. Also, we've seen a couple of problems going through the year as we've worked with parents on this issue. Even though I'm the Home Education Foundation representative, we work with all parents who are directing the education of their children, so we've been very involved in the PEP. So what we've seen is that the bill says that, and it's just one little phrase in the bill, in the definition of personalized education programs, that they should that those PEP students should be able to have the same rights, flexibility, and opportunities as home education students. But the districts are very confused, and because they've never accepted money from the outside, they aren't providing those same opportunities for PEP students. So the bill says that the PEP parents should pay the school district, the Florida Virtual School, and charter schools if they participate at their schools and taking any classes, but there's no mechanism to do that. And we need the bill to say that the districts have to develop a contract with the SFOs so that they can figure out how to transfer that money, because there's no mechanism to do that. So I think that's an important part to add to this bill. And we'd also like to ask for equity for the PEP students to be able to get their money August 1st instead of September 1st. As I've said before, many of these parents are operating on one income. They can't wait till September 1st to get their money, or they can't line up the classes they need, the lessons that they need. And we've moved that with the state money for FESUA students, and the money is sitting there in account with the scholarship funding organizations because of tax credit scholarships. So there's no reason they can't release that money August 1st to the parents. Another point that I think we need in this bill is that for the Center for Students with Unique Abilities, I believe that there needs to be a designated parent advisory board so that they can help that center understand for all of the disabilities that are being served in this scholarship, that they have parent representatives for each one of those disabilities to help them decide about what can be spent in the scholarship and what hasn't. We appreciate, though, I wanted to say, the fact that you've increased the number of students that can be served in the Unique Ability Scholarship, because many parents and many children have really benefited from this scholarship. So thank you very much, and I look forward to working with you.
Thank you, ma'am. And next up we have Mr. Nathan Hoffman, Foundation for Florida's Future, wishing to appear. And if we could kindly try to limit comments to 2 minutes. We have a number of people wishing to appear and speak. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I'll be very brief because the point I was going to make has been mentioned multiple times here today. But just to add that we look forward to working with the sponsor and to the committee throughout the remainder of the process to add some clarity to the instructional material provision. We are concerned that the way it's worded right now, it would preclude a family from being able to purchase reasonable musical instruments and things like that. So we hope that we can address that throughout the process. Thank you to the committee.
Thank you, sir. Next up, we have Malka Kaunet, did I pronounce it correctly, Teach Florida, wishing to appear. Malka Kaunet, not here, okay, moving on. We have Alexis LaRoe, Step Up for Students, waving in support. Next is Amy Nelson, representing herself as a parent, wishing to appear. You're recognized.
Good morning. Thank you. As you said, my name is Amy Nelson. We are from Okaloosa County in Crestview. I'm a member of the Florida Parents for School Options, and I choose to homeschool our children. As a parent, I think it's important that we all have all option types available to our children. ESA should be able to be used to access all educational options, whether it's public, private, or religious, so that each child can get the education that they need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Ethan Merchant, Florida Parents for School Options, wishing to appear. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ethan Merchant, here today representing Florida Parents for School Options. We're an advocacy group whose members support all types of school choice options. We're very thankful for the passage and approval of HB 1 during the 2023 session. And as the legislature looks to make revisions to school choice, we hope to be a resource. We would add that we represent many online and virtual parents, and that we're hopeful that by addressing the non-sectarian virtual instruction language in this bill, that families will be able to access full-time online education in private or religious schools through the state's universal ESA program. Additionally, many parents are concerned with the safety of their private religious schools, and a full-time private religious online option would provide families with peace of mind. We look forward to working with the sponsor as the bill moves through the process. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Melissa Lay, representing herself, wishing to appear. You're recognized, Ms. Lay.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I'm Alyssa Lay. I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida, and I'm a parent who has utilized lots of options. And as a former virtual school parent, I just wanted to say that I think it's really important that parents and students have access to all options, whether it is private or online, brick and mortar, virtual. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Kristen Taiegi, if I pronounce that correctly, Parents for School Options, wishing to appear. You're recognized, ma'am.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today in reference to HB 1403. My name is Kristen Taiegi, and I represent Parents for School Options, a national advocacy organization that supports families in their pursuit of equitable access to high-quality education. Our coalition is active in 34 states, including Florida, and we have more than 200,000 parents across the country that are part of our coalition. Earlier this month, PSO joined several notable national and Florida-based education choice organizations, including American Federation for Children, EdChoice, Foundation for Florida's Future, Teach Florida, and the James Madison Institute, in a letter asking lawmakers to make small but necessary changes to HB 1403 to expand the program to allow families to use their FES funds for full-time private, online, or blended schools, both religious and non-sectarian. In 2023, seven states joined Florida in passing or expanding universal education scholarships programs. Most noteworthy were the programs enacted in Arkansas, Iowa, and South Carolina. The difference between these programs and Florida's is they allowed for full-time online programs for families to choose those options. While virtual and blended options may not be the best for every child, they work for more than 40,000 Florida students who are currently attending online public schools and are thriving. In supporting this expansion, we emphasize the importance of recognizing and respecting the diverse educational needs of students and their families. Just as parents currently have the right to choose religious or non-sectarian traditional private schools, they should also have the freedom to choose virtual ones as well. Thank you for your attention to this matter, and we look forward to the continued collaboration to advance educational opportunities for all students in Florida. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Marie Claire Lemon, or Lemon, Fund Education Now, wishing to appear.
Thank you. My name is Marie Claire Lemon, and I wanted to echo actually the comment spoken by the teacher who was here up here first on this bill. At a time when this body has declared that academic accountability for public schools by way of standards, progress monitoring, and testing is the hill that it's willing to die on, the absence of this kind of accountability on the diverted use of public dollars for these many vouchers is striking. There needs to be a way to ensure quality of programs and providers funded by public dollars. Parents receiving scholarships from the government will be counting on and trusting the quality of the options available to them. And also, many students who have gone to elementary and maybe middle school with these scholarships will return to our public schools for high school because there are fewer options, and we need them to be well prepared for our high schools. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Then we have Sue Waltansky, representing herself, wishing to appear.
again. For the record, I'm Sue Altansky, Monroe County School Board, speaking here for myself. And I want to apologize for not getting to you sooner, but I come from the southernmost district where it's still warm. And I flew in late last night. Thank you for this bill. It was a momentous bill last year to expand to House Bill 1, and this deals with some of the issues, many, many of the issues that people are having. I wanted to mention a few things. The deadlines for applying are good, but unless the deadlines are before the school districts do their budgeting, we're still going to be budgeting by guesswork, as state as well. And that will continue to be a problem. Secondly, the changes to the cross-checks will keep public schools from receiving the full-time equivalent funding for the voucher schools or voucher students attending private school. But the problem districts are having is if a student applies for a voucher and is funded, but then just shows up on day one to public school, we're required to take all students, so we don't know they applied for the voucher. And we can show that they were in our school on October 1st at the count, but we don't get funded for them. And the loss to Miami-Dade was over $20 million for that issue, and that has to be addressed. It has to go both ways. Money has to follow the child both ways, and we need to have a way to show that when the child is on the first day of school at a public school, that they should count at that public school, and the funding has to be able to be transferred out of that account somehow. The third is, again, I've read a lot of bills. I think the virtual sectarian, non-sectarian question is, as I read it, is under what the district options are. And I have no problem with a child with an ESA being able to attend a sectarian or a non-sectarian virtual school. That should, I believe they already can. What my concern is that districts are required to offer virtual options to the students in their district that remain, like Monroe Virtual School, and a school board should not be choosing a sectarian virtual school for their students. So that has to be, maybe I'm wrong, but that needs to be clarified. And then finally, the Hope Scholarship. Repealing the Hope Scholarship and repurposing that money is a great idea. That bill was, frankly, a disingenuous attempt to expand vouchers by appealing to sympathy for bullying students. And it was a win-win because you could expand vouchers and label public schools as dangerous. There's nothing that says that bullying only happens in public schools. And we continue to hear it today about how awfully dangerous public schools are, which will drive people out of public schools. When a child is bullied or in a situation where they would qualify for a Hope Scholarship, those families are in distress. They come into our schools. Podium's falling apart. Sorry. We have to tell them, here's the thing, you can apply to leave, but they don't want to leave. They want the bullying to be fixed. And if they do want to leave, they often just want to transfer to the next public school over. So it was always a flawed program. That's why only, 500 or fewer students participated, yet it's funded for $93 million off of these auto sales. I think the $93 million would be better appropriated to address the original issue, which it would be to put intense anti-bullying programs in all the schools. Thank you so much. Sorry I broke your podium.
It's okay. Can be fixed. Thank you, ma'am. Members, is there any debate, please? Yes, Representative Bracey Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Rep. Tom Call. I don't think I said good morning in our first discussion. First, let me say I'd love to be a third wheel on the conversation between you and Ranking Member Williams that you all are going to have. I'd love to be a part of that chat. I am up on the bill. But this is kind of tough for me. For those that remember last session, I was not an advocate for HB1 because I felt that we needed to be having more of a robust conversation about the elevation of our public school system, and at least have those conversations in tandem or together with universal vouchers. And I felt like the focus was on vouchers and not necessarily on both systems. Be that as it may, we're here. It is the law of the land. And so I believe the portions on this bill that are dealing with the specificity of instruction material have to do with, and I can be wrong, but have to do with an effort to not abuse the system and not, you know, purchasing things that are, you know, more household items as opposed to education instructional material. I believe that is the intent. Which I'd agree with. I would agree that when you buy items, when you're on this program and you have monies to buy items, they need to go for educational materials and instructional materials. But at the same time, I also believe that if we are saying that we really want these students to thrive, that are homeschooled and then are not in public education, mind you, I am an advocate for public school education. I think I said that three times, I'll say it again. However, if we want these students to thrive that are not in the public school system, I think we need to ensure that they have the right resources to do so. I've said at this podium, at this microphone many times, I'm a huge advocate for arts and culture. Y'all may or may not know, I have a degree in theater. I think it's really important that students have access to arts and culture. And kind of the example that I gave, if we're going to help with violin lessons but not help that low-income student purchase a violin, I think our work that we're trying to do is in vain. So I am up on the bill, and I'd love to have further conversations about clarity of some of these definitions so that the students that are homeschooled can also succeed. However, I am still a advocate for public education. Thanks.
Chair, you recognize? Do you have anything else? Right. Ranking Member Williams.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. As someone stated about a game changer, Rep. Tomko, I appreciate having the conversation that we have had. But I wanted to let everyone know that I think one of the only ones that have had the opportunity to have three children in the house at the same time. One in public, one in private, and one in chartered. So I'm very open-minded about what I say about education. When we spoke about the HOPE Scholarship, I think I'm the only one that served on this dais right now that was here when that HOPE Scholarship was created. So I know what it's all about. What we have done is allowed the bully to stay in the classroom and to continue to bully other students with that HOPE Scholarship. Instead of removing the cancel problem that we had, we removed uprooted students that was already in a place where they enjoyed being. We cherry-picked the student that we wanted to move from certain schools. And we have additional money, billions of dollars, being held in an account that could be used to help additional students. That's why the HOPE Scholarship has so much money in it at this particular time. We also spoke about accountability and being transparent about what's going on. When we have additional money just sitting to the side, just because we have the opportunity to hold that money and the money is not being used, we have additional students that need this money. And it's not fair to the students that's in need to hold it in account to those that is not using. I appreciate having the conversation, Rep. Tomko. I know you have worked very hard with HB1 and also now 1403. I appreciate your work. In one account, we transfer about $65 million, and only 13 has been used at this particular time. And I have a concern about that because this is a year later, and we're still asking about numbers, you know, data that we should have in hand to make sure that we are headed down the right road. So at this point, I would really like to continue the conversation that I have had with you and understand that I'm very open with education. It's no one size fits all. Here's what's best fit this, what's best for that student. And I'm open right now to continue that conversation, and I appreciate your work. Thank you.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Representative Temple, you're recognized.
Thank you. And I love the last comment that Ranking Member just made, because it's not a one-size-fits-all. And so to talk about a little bit about that, the issue with the Hope Scholarship that's come up with some of the comments, last year's choice, HB1, came through, that supplants, that changes the dynamics. And so there are opportunities for parents to make that choice so that they can find the right fit for their student. And also with the bullying comments that have been made, as a former administrator, you know, we dealt with a lot of situations. And unfortunately, not everything appears as it's been told. And so if the situations that were brought up are accurate and told exactly how it happened, then they were handled incorrectly. And I encourage parents that if something is happening that is incorrect, something that's not right, the bullying student should not remain in the classroom. They should move to another classroom and have parameters put in place to protect the student that has been bullied. That is what should happen. And if that doesn't happen within your school, within your area, then go through the process with the principal, with the school board members. They are your representation to make sure things that happen. Parents have power, and they need to use that power to protect their child. They're their advocate, and they shouldn't be intimidated or scared or worried about anything else. They're there to protect their child. And so making sure that if those situations do occur, go through the process, because I guarantee you the people that are in place care about the students and want to make sure that they have the safest environment to be able to grow and excel to the best of their ability. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Rizzo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And Chair, thank you very much for all your hard work on this. I just wanted to make a few comments. You know, we have within K-12 education, whether it's public voucher, we have about 3.5 million students in the state of Florida. Billions of dollars are being spent on it. I truly believe that equity is at the heart of everything. And so as we fine-tune things, I appreciate your work with trying to get all of this done, the speaker's work, Ms. Potvin, everything that's thrown out, these huge numbers are just, they're mind-boggling sometimes to figure out where we're putting things. But, you know, just a few comments. School systems have child welfare at the forefront of everything that they do. And so we may hear a story about, an account about how, we're not removing bullies, we're not doing this. And as a former administrator like my colleague, Representative Temple, I can tell you that the moment that bullying is heard, school systems jump into action. They immediately go after that because it can turn very ugly very, very quickly. So they take it very, very seriously. And hope will still remain. We will still have that option to have parents that feel that they need to remove it. It's not that the state is saying, no, we're going to remove the victim. No, it's a choice that we're giving to the parent that if they feel that they need to for safety of their child, it's still open and it's still going to be there and it's still funded. As far as what we do with home students, students that choose that option or virtual, I know that we're having discussions, and thank you, Chair Tomkow, again, for always getting to the heart of the matter and saying, where can we fine-tune it? Where can we get these options open? And you're right, Representative Bracey Davis. Part of it is that we want to ensure that there are expenditures that are made in the correct way. Again, we hear accounts and we always want to make sure. But again, overall, I hope that we don't lose this focus that equity is at the heart of what we're doing. We want to give parents choices. We have been talking about accountability, and believe me, when it comes to hope and it comes to things about child welfare, we are not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We are having these conversations as to how we can focus and fine-tune what we do with these really, like we said, with these game-changing pieces of legislation like last year's HB 1. But thank you very much, and I love the fact that we're having these conversations and we continue to do this. And thank you for all your hard work on this bill.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Any other debate? Yes, ma'am. Rep. Michaels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Tomko, I just want to thank you because you really, we were on the phone again for an hour trying to address, and you had very good answers and responses, questions that my constituents had, confusion there may have been of how they read this bill. And I want to thank you for the work that you've done on this. You've listened as Chair Rep. Rizzo has spoken, because we want to get it right. We are, all of us on the committees, we love children. We want to make sure that they are given the tools needed, as well as the parents, or we wouldn't be here, I don't think, any of us. But at the same time, as representatives of this House, we do have a fiscal responsibility to make sure that taxpayers' money is spent correctly. And that's a fine line to walk when you have parents that are responding back. So I just want to thank you because the school choice bill, the HB 1 bill, is something other states wish they had. We have it. We're utilizing it. We're going back. We're fine-tuning it. You've been very responsive to all of us, and I just want to thank you for that. And I will have answers for some of my constituents going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to debate? With that, I'd just like to comment to Ranking Member Williams that at one point, my three children, I had one in private, one in public, and one doing virtual school at the same time, so we're tied for first place there. And with that, I recognize Chair Tomko to close on the bill.
Thank you, and thank you to everyone on this committee. I know that we have had very thorough conversations about not only this legislation, but what brought us to this point over the last year when it comes to where our taxpayer dollars are going, what we're spending money on, what programs we're funding, how we're funding them. And you guys have really gone above and beyond to, get involved and in the weeds of what we are doing as a state, which is what I appreciate in this committee, because we do have a very big responsibility. We do have a very large budget. We do have a lot of dollars that we're responsible of, and making sure that they are going to the proper places is something that I take personally. It is our responsibility and our duty to do that as a state. I thank all of the parents that have contacted us, whether it be Facebook, email, calls, and coming up here to Tallahassee. I know it's a lot and intimidating to come and speak in front of all of us, but we are listening to your concerns, and we are hearing out your concerns, and appreciate your advocacy for your children, because that's what it's all about. Rep. Michael hit the nail on the head when she said, we have a tough job to balance the responsibility of the fiscal dollars with also what it takes to, help your child succeed. And, there's no greater advocate or no one that knows more than a parent of what that is. However, our job as state legislators and as the state appropriators is to make sure that those dollars that are spent are truly to educate your child and further their success, to make sure that they are set up to have any and all opportunities ahead of them as possible. Rep. Brazy Davis, you brought up the arts. I wish that I could sing or play an instrument, but God has not blessed me with any of those talents. However, I do want to point out that these children are still able to participate in all of this, just as they would in a public school. The only difference is we're in public schools too. They're not purchasing violins for students. And so, those students are still able to connect with the arts and are still able to, go and try out all the different wonders of the world with the arts. And even in PE, they're able to do that as well. And so we're not saying that they can't have those same opportunities. What we're saying is we are trying to make sure that we are focused on what is, instructional material that is going to be those core
core subjects for those students, and they're able to purchase the equipment. They're able to buy microscopes. They're able to get goggles for science experiments. We're saying they can do those things. It was brought up with the UA, the Unique Ability Scholarships, which I'm glad was brought up because now I can showcase that parents are a part of the process to develop what is important to those unique ability students for their materials. That is part of the process that we're putting into place. We understand that those children need different things than your typical student. And so we want to make sure that parents are a part of the process, which is why we've gone as far as saying the University of Central Florida, with their expertise, is going to develop this list for these students with parents. The HOPE Scholarship is something that has been brought up in each committee, and I said this in the last committee, and I mean it wholeheartedly. You know, we, in expanding school choice and doing universal school choice, we do not have to wait anymore for a situation to bubble up that it meets that administrator level. As a parent, you know what is going on with your student. You know when change of mood happens or when they're not thriving. And so with the expansion of school choice, what we're saying in the state of Florida is now you don't have to wait for a situation to get to that level in order for your child to be removed from a situation. And I think that that should provide a lot of hope for these parents because they have the ability to rectify the situation before it becomes one. You know, those dollars are going to be going to the FTC scholarships that will be for all students in the state of Florida to have that access. Members, I would ask for your favorable support of this bill. I really think that as we continue to work this through the process, it will continue to be a bill that you can be proud of. And I would ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Rep. Tomko. Having closed on the bill, DJ, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko? Yes. Vice Chair Gossett-Seaton?
Yes.
Ranking Member Williams?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez? Bracey Davis?
Yes.
Kennedy? Daly? Daniels?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman? Lopez?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
Members, by your vote, CSHB 1403 will be reported favorably. Members, this concludes our meeting today. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Temple moves, we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.